conversation with their artists over the stop-start buzz of the tattoo machines. A short, curvy girl with bright blue hair smiled up at them from behind the desk, her piercings and perfectly winged eyeliner telling Lydia that she was probably older than the 14 years that she looked. Lydia suddenly felt about 100. "Hi, guys," she said, looking between them. "How can I help?"
"We have appointments with Eddie and Max at 11, Jake said, smiling his lopsided grin at her.
Something like jealousy ran its finger down Lydia's breastbone.
"I'll let them know,"
Blue Hair said with a smile, but a huge bear of a man was already tearing through the middle of the shop towards them, eyes fixed on Jake as he beamed a wide smile through the thatch of his massive ginger beard.
"Maxie!"
Jake cried with genuine delight, moving to hug the taller man who had already spread his arms wide ready.
"Oh, it's been too long, man."
They rocked together, both lost in the moment, before Max stepped back from his friend and looked at Lydia with a smile.
"And you must be Lily."
Lydia smiled in response, reaching out a hand while guilt gripped quiet fingers around her ribcage.
"Nice to meet you."
Max chuckled as his fist enclosed hers, almost every inch of his warm skin tattooed with sprawling grayscale patterns and the swirl of intricate seascapes. Lydia could have spent hours looking at them all.
"I'll get you consent forms and then once Eddie shows up, we'll get started."
"Thanks, man,"
Jake said, his grin as huge as ever.
"You're getting tattooed too?"
Lydia muttered as quietly as she was able to over the hum of the machines. Jake nodded, that smile going nowhere.
"Of course, couldn't let you tackle it alone."
His warm eyes found her, creases deepening around them.
"It's you jump, I jump, remember?"
There was a different feeling swelling in Lydia's chest then, something warm and comforting that she didn't recognise at all. She smiled quickly at Jake and hoped with everything she had that he couldn't see it. Max came back with their consent forms and they sat together on the teal velvet Chesterfield underneath the front window to fill them out. The form was relatively simple: name, date of birth, known medical conditions and acknowledgement of potential risks. Lydia had signed scarier things in her life, and with that small rush of confidence, she went to start filling it in. And just as she did, Jake began to speak beside her.
"I've got to tell you, Lil, I'm excited."
Her heart nearly stopped in her chest. Lily. Quite fortuitously, she'd only got as far as writing L-Y in the empty box beside name, and even better, there was just enough space between the letters for her to squeeze the I and the L in. She added them quickly and took a deep, steadying breath, her heart still beating double time as she filled out the rest of the form. And when she signed on the line at the bottom, she took extra care to sign Lily's name instead, pushing away the small chant of liar, liar, liar that was building in her brain. The door opened and closed beside them and a slight woman swept in, her full sleeves of beautiful floral tattoos a sharp contrast to the plain black of her outfit. She was wearing jeans and a t-shirt, but on her they looked cooler somehow, edgy and interesting, and when Lydia caught sight of the delicate flowers inked along her hairline, all the more visible because of the undercut along one side of the woman's face, she felt almost too frumpy to even be in the shop.
"Hey, Ed,"
Max said to the woman, his huge frame still perched on the edge of the reception desk, and he motioned to Lydia.
"Your 11 o'clock is here."
Eddie turned to Lydia then with a smile almost as big as one of Jake's. She'd seemed intimidating at first, but the expression on her face was anything but, and when she spoke, it was with a sweet sing-song of a West Country accent.
"Lovely to meet you, Lily," she said,
the tone of her voice so warm and welcoming that it put Lydia immediately at ease. She showed Lydia through to the back of the shop where the two free couches were, pulling out a sketchbook with the design she'd drawn up based on Lydia's very specific ramblings of the idea she'd had. Lydia actually gasped when she looked at the design. It was perfect. She'd never been a person who particularly wanted a tattoo, nor had she ever really noticed them on other people. So when she'd first thought about it, right back when she'd first found the list, she struggled to imagine what she could possibly want to have immortalised on her skin. She never dreamed that inspiration would strike during one of her mother's outlandish learning moments. But once it had, the whole thing had just felt like fate, if fate was something that Lydia was at all able to believe in these days. As soon as Aga had given her speech about growing potatoes, the idea had come to Lydia like a vision. A potato plant from roots up to flowers drawn in delicate lines like a page from a vintage botanical reference book. And Eddie had absolutely done the idea justice. Her lines elegant and sweeping, turning Lydia's clumsy explanation into a work of art that she would be proud to wear on her skin forever. She nodded at Eddie with a smile, words struggling to form around the lump in her throat, and when she finally managed, "I love it," Eddie beamed proudly, clapping her hands together in glee. "Ah, I'm so glad," she said. "I really loved drawing this one."
"That's beautiful," Jake said from over Lydia's shoulder. "But,"
he strained his eyes to look closer,
"is that a potato?"
Lydia smiled. "Yeah."
"Why?"
She looked round at him then, steeling herself to meet with those eyes. "To remind me that I'm the kind of woman who can grow her own potatoes." He looked at her, nodding slowly at first, but his brows pulling into a question.
"I don't know what that means."
And she didn't reply, just smiled a small smile to herself as she thought of Aga. Of how fierce she was, how fearless, how Lydia hoped that having her mother's metaphor inked onto her skin would in some small way help her to remember that she had that same fearlessness inside her too, even if it was very well hidden. But she didn't have to say anything because Eddie was fixing Jake with a stare on her behalf. "Jake?" Eddie started, tucking a stray strand of hair behind one extremely pierced ear. "You, of all people, should know that it doesn't matter what the design means to you, only what it means to her." And then she turned to Lydia with a warm smile. "I'll just go copy this and we'll get it scaled for you." Lydia couldn't help but smirk as the younger woman walked back out towards the reception desk, leaving her alone with Jake. "I hope you feel suitably told off." And he laughed, the sweet sound of it reaching down deep inside of her.
"I actually do."
After a few minutes, Eddie came back with a paper copy of the design, and when she asked whereabouts it was going, Lydia put a hand to the left side of her ribs, near to her heart.
"Ribs can be quite a sore spot for your first tattoo,"
Eddie said gently, sucking a breath in through her teeth. Jake's laugh in response was strangely quiet for him.
"It's okay, she's tough."
And Lydia was adamant. She'd rather endure a little more physical pain in order to be able to keep it a secret from Aga. And not just because she was completely sure that her mother would tear strips off her if she knew, even though Lydia was, as she had asserted so many times, a fully grown woman. She also wanted to avoid Aga finding out how much she'd valued her advice. Lydia was absolutely positive that the power would go straight to her mother's head. Eddie had Lydia pull her shirt up, inspecting her skin there more closely than anyone had for a while, and Lydia turned instinctively away from Jake, shielding herself even though he had already turned his eyes towards Max, who was walking back through the shop with a smile on his face. Lydia was distracted then for a few minutes, getting into the intricacies of placement and sizing with Eddie, and it wasn't until Eddie went back through the shop to prepare the stencil that Lydia turned back. And it was just about the same time, apparently, that Jake was preparing, whipping off his t-shirt in that two-handed over-the-head grab like some kind of action hero. She'd have rolled her eyes if she'd been able to unglue them from the lines and contours of Jake's body. Ah. His eyes met hers as his head popped through the shirt, hair wild and that scar tugging at his grin in a way that all of a sudden made her pulse jump. She smiled quickly and turned away, grateful when Eddie came striding back down towards her, brandishing the scrap of paper she was holding with excitement in her eyes. Lydia's pulse climbed an extra few notches with every stage of the preparation, from Eddie taping her bra band an inch higher on that side and preparing Lydia's skin, right through to applying the stencil, double and triple checking Lydia was happy with it, and then finally getting her situated on the couch, surrounded by two or three cling-filmed cushions. By the time the needle touched her skin, her eyes clamping shut as a reflex, the only way for Lydia's anxiety to go was down. It was all she could concentrate on at first, the intermittent buzz of the machine, the sharp nip of the needle which faded after a minute or two, to a deep, drawn-out scratch. It was painful, but not overly so, and as her pulse began to slow, she opened her eyes again. And when she did, she was looking straight into the clear, deep amber eyes of Jake Jones. He was lying on his front, head turned towards Lydia, while Max sat beside him, staring intently at the skin between Jake's shoulder blades as his hands moved in the same sure rhythm as Eddie's. Lydia hadn't even seen Jake's design, and she regretted that now, trying to guess from the shapes Max's hands were making what the end result would be.
"You okay?"
Jake mouthed to her, and she nodded, wincing slightly as the scratch of the machine caught her around the front of the ribs. His smile in return was slight, and she could see the same tension in his eyes as he braced himself against the pain.
"So I didn't even get to see the new addition to your tree, Jake," Eddie said while she worked, as if sensing the two of them could use a distraction.
"Is that what you're having?" Lydia asked. "I didn't see your design either."
"It's a work in progress," Jake replied, and he smiled, though his voice was clipped. Max stepped in to help him.
"We've been growing this tree for nearly 10 years, me and this lad."
His head tilted down towards Jake, though the rest of him stayed absolutely steady.
"Me and Jakey go way back, don't we, kid?"
Jake mumbled an incoherent sound.
"Went to college together back in the day and just never lost touch,"
Max continued, pausing to scratch the side of his cheek with his shoulder.
"He was the one who encouraged me when I gave up my very serious but very boring accountancy job to do an unpaid apprenticeship at a tattoo shop, can you imagine?"
He laughed a little to himself.
"My mum nearly disowned me. Friend said I was an idiot, but not Jake. He always believed. He was one of the first actual humans I ever tattooed, and I was shitting myself the whole time. He was competing in Europe then, and I was convinced that I was going to mess it up in some way and somehow inadvertently end his career."
Jake huffed a sharp laugh.
"Did that all by myself though, didn't I?"
There was an edge to his voice that Lydia hadn't heard before, and as if in response to it, Max softened his tone even more.
"I was big into trees then, who even knows why. Just used to doodle them on everything. But I was much too scared to tattoo a whole tree onto him, so as a joke, Jakey told me just to do a stump. I could manage that."
His smile grew.
"It was rubbish, but I managed it. 'Cause this guy had faith in me."
"It wasn't rubbish," Jake said with a pained grin. "Just rustic."
Max guffawed.
"See?"
Lydia did see.
"Anyway,"
Max continued, straining his eyes hard on Jake's back.
"He came back at least once a year after that, always travelling back from wherever he was in the world so that we could work on the next part. And over time, the tree grew and grew. Each new part a reflection of what was happening in his life at the time."
Lydia nodded, a smile lifting one side of her mouth. "What's the one you're working on now?" Jake replied before Max could.
One broken branch, one new shoot.
She smiled more, understanding. Makes sense.
And obviously,
Max said, one eyebrow raised, although he wasn't looking at any of them.
My ultimate dream is to put roots on this beaut.
He looked up then, sneaking a glance at Lydia, which made her flush with embarrassment.
One day, I'm going to manage it.
There was meaning woven into the tone of Max's voice, the symbolism not lost one bit on Lydia. And she wondered, not for the first time, why Jake was so resistant to putting down roots, why he never talked about meeting someone. She'd asked him about it a few times since their first conversation in the cafe that day, and he always gave the same answer, that he was okay as he was, that he was taking some time to see what it was he wanted, that he wasn't in a rush. But there was always something unspoken in the lilt of his voice. Lydia could feel it. And then Jake spoke through the grit of his teeth, and she felt that too, his words cutting at her chest in a way they had no right to.
One day, but that day ain't on the horizon yet, bud.
And something about the grip of those words on the inside of her ribcage, combined with the sting of the needle on the outside, forced Lydia to admit something to herself. Something she had been trying her hardest to avoid until that very moment. She was beginning to develop very real feelings for her very fake boyfriend. Her very fake boyfriend who, as of that moment, still thought she was somebody else. Chapter 23. The tattoo itself took around an hour and a half, and it wasn't until just about an hour in that Lydia really started to feel the scratch of the needle. There had been pain before that, of course, but until then it had been more abstract, a generalised scratch, a deep burn. But around that hour mark, she suddenly began to feel every puncture, every tiny slice of her skin as the ink was forced underneath it. It was the endorphins wearing off, she told herself, and for a while she almost believed it. It certainly couldn't be anything at all to do with her revelation about Jake. But she couldn't deny that there had been a change in the feeling right around the time he'd made the comment about roots. And that, in itself, was ridiculous. She wasn't even divorced from a man who, until a couple of weeks ago, she'd been so sure she was still desperately in love with. She definitely wasn't looking for any kind of relationship anytime soon, let alone a serious one. So why on earth had it got under her skin like that? She tried her best to shake the feeling away, squeezing her eyes shut through a particularly nippy section of her almost finished tattoo when she felt the warmth of a hand taking hers. Jake was right there when she opened her eyes, kneeling topless next to the couch she was lying on with his hand gently wrapped around her fingers.
"Is it hurting?"
he asked quietly, eyes as soft as she had ever seen as they stayed locked onto hers. And she wasn't just talking about the punch of the needle into her skin when she replied simply, "Yes." He stayed with her there for 10 minutes or more until the design was completely finished. He didn't move or speak or even complain about the press of the tiled floor on his kneecaps the way Lydia almost definitely would have done if the situation were reversed. He was just there. The way she was beginning to realise he always was when she needed him. A bit like the way he'd been there to carry her down a mountain, or talk her off a diving board, or cheer her on as she rode the most underwhelming ride of a wave that ever there was. A bit like the way he'd told her over and over that she had it, that she could do it, and more importantly than that, that she didn't have to. A bit like the way he always made her feel like the very best version of herself, even though the very best version of herself was apparently somebody else. She could have cried. She actually did cry, just barely, when Eddie said a few moments later, "We're done now." and sprayed something blissfully cool and calming onto the burning skin of her ribs. But she pushed her tongue up against the roof of her mouth to stave off the tears, the way Aga had taught her, while she tried like hell to channel just an ounce of her mother's ferocity.
"I'll just leave that on there for a little while to let the soreness settle,"
Eddie said, her double pierced lip pulling into a kind smile.
"By the time Jake's finished, we should be all ready to wrap it up."
Lydia's forehead creased in confusion. "Jake isn't done." She looked back at him, still perched in that same position, his look of concern now back to the same lopsided smile she was so used to. It was only then that she noticed that Max was still sitting on the stool next to Jake's couch, just exactly as he had been, watching the two of them with a curious expression on his face.
"The broken branch is done," Max said with a cock of his eyebrow so slight that Lydia almost didn't clock it. "Just need to put the finishing touches on that new shoot."
And he looked at Lydia then almost as if he could read her mind, before turning all his attention back to Jake. Lydia gasped out loud when Jake turned away from her and she caught a glimpse of his back, ink-smeared and swollen, with tiny rivulets of blood running a little way down from the fresh ink between his shoulder blades. He must have literally hopped straight off his couch in the middle of his own tattoo to comfort her through hers, which was so typically, beautifully, infuriatingly Jake. The next 10 minutes passed in a blur of small talk and big feelings, and by the time Eddie carefully wiped down Lydia's ribs, took a few pictures of the design and then led her to the mirror to take her first proper look, Lydia was feeling teary again.
"I absolutely love it," she said honestly, focusing solely on the elegant beauty of the design on her skin rather than on any of the things about her body that usually made her feel insecure.
Just for then, she didn't focus on the silvery shoals of stretch marks nor the slight bulge of her skin over the top of her jeans, no matter how high she pulled them up. She didn't find fault with her body at all in that moment, only pride. And it was a feeling she was most unused to.
"Thank you," she said,
the words catching a little on the lump in her throat, and Eddie beamed in response.
"No,"
the younger woman said.
"Thank you. You're my first ever potato."
And the two women laughed together all the way back to the couches, where Eddie deftly covered the design with some kind of curious sticky cling film affair and gave Lydia a thorough talking through the aftercare procedure. Jake's design was almost done when they turned their attention back to him, and Lydia took the opportunity, while he was lying motionless, to study the full tattoo, from where it started in the small of his back right up to the part that Max was finishing. It started off simply, rustically, as Jake had said, each section progressing after that, as Max's skills had progressed, right up to the incredible detail of the last three. They each told a story, from sections with blossoms and trinkets woven in, buds and new leaves, right through to broken twigs and bare branches. There was one section in particular that had no branches at all, only a few notches and knots in the bark. She longed to know the stories behind them all. Lydia also took the opportunity, if she were being honest, to shamelessly scope out the smooth contours of Jake's bare skin. She was, after all, only human. It was some time after lunch when the two of them walked back out into the balmy air of the summer day, after finishing and paying for their tattoos and spending a few extra minutes chatting with the two artists. Jake had pulled the red felt tip out of his pocket almost as soon as they'd left the shop, and Lydia smiled as she headed over to a wall to lean on the smooth stone of the side, retrieving the list and crossing off 8, get a tattoo. And, as was their way now, when Lydia said, 6 down, there was only one way for Jake to reply.
3 to go.
So, Eddie's a she, eh? Lydia said, changing the subject completely so that she could more easily ignore the kick of her heart in her chest when she thought about what would happen after the list. Good job I knew that in advance and didn't make a fool of myself or anything. But he just laughed.
She wouldn't have minded. Her real name is Edwina. Nothing much phases a person when they've grown up with a name like that.
Edwina, Lydia winced. Ouch.
Named after Edwina Curry,
Jake continued, the lightness of humour in his voice.
Her dad was a big fan.
Lydia snorted a laugh. Eddie suits her much better. Jake nodded in agreement and she felt it again, that quiet prod of jealousy. She seriously needed to get it together.
So, how did you find it?
He asked gently.
Now that you don't have to pretend to be tough in front of the cool tattoo people.
She swatted him on the arm and he laughed aloud, obviously proud of himself. I am tough, thanks, she said, rolling her eyes. Unmedicated birth at 20 will do that to you.
So will an open fracture of both bones in your arm,
he said with a wry grin. Of course, from your
tightrope fall,
she rolled her eyes. I don't even want to know the real story anymore. But that wasn't quite true. After all her recent epiphanies, she was filled with a deep yearning to know all his secrets. The stories behind the tattoos, the reason he didn't want to put down roots. Not to mention that she really, really wanted to kiss him again. She was still thinking about it the following morning, lounging lazily in her bed. She was actually pretending to still be asleep, largely to avoid wincing too near Aga and giving the game away, when she was surprised but delighted to hear the unmistakable melody of her video chat ringtone. There was only one person in the world who she ever video chatted with, but the custom tone that she'd assigned left her in no doubt at all. Ollie! She squealed as she swiped to answer, suddenly bursting with a feeling like joy or maybe it was relief. And her daughter looked every bit as pleased to see her. Hi, Mum, Ollie said, tanned cheeks dimpling in a wide smile. Lydia smiled too.
I'm so glad you called. I was about to write you the world's longest email.
Well, now I just feel sad that I missed out on that.
Lydia grinned. Soz.
Just give me the main bullet points.
And the words just tumbled out.
There's a very slight chance that I might be falling for Jake.
Ollie raised a single eyebrow at her mother.
Obviously. Right, well,
Lydia said, feeling a flush rise up her cheeks.
It wasn't obvious to me.
Her daughter smiled at that, her head cocking slowly to the side as she considered Lydia carefully.
So, what's the plan?
There was that sharp stab again. No plan, Lydia replied simply.
He's not interested. You sure?
Pretty sure, she shrugged, defeat sneaking into her tone. He's said almost as much on a few different occasions.
Okay,
Ollie replied, but it didn't sound like an okay, more like an okay for now, and then her body language changed completely.
So, I have news too.
Oh my God, Lydia said, guilt pulling at her throat. I'm so sorry, rabbiting on about my stuff when you called me first. But Ollie waved her mother's concerns away with a smile.
I live to hear you rabbit on about your stuff.
Okay, she said, returning the smile. But what's your thing?
It's a two-parter, actually.
Good news and bad news? Ollie shook her head, her waves bouncing all over the place.
Good news and...
She paused for a bit, thinking.
Intriguing news.
Lydia raised an eyebrow.
Interested?
I found Lily.
Ollie blurted, her eyes wide.
What?
Lily Bennett,
Ollie said more slowly this time.
You know, your Lily Bennett, the Lily Bennett who wrote the list. I found her.
The edges of her mouth quirked up, not quite a smile.
I know who she is.
Lydia didn't know how to feel about that. A month ago, she would have been feeling all the same emotions that she could see in Ollie. A month ago, she would have been delighted to track down the woman who had inspired her. But now? Now, she wasn't so sure. She was still curious about the mysterious list writer, of course she was, but there was something else nagging at her. If she found the real Lily, there was a part of her that felt as if she, Lydia Gray, might fade into the shadows of the woman she had built up so much in her head. She already felt as if she alone was not quite enough. "And?" she asked, hoping that her daughter could not hear the edge of fear in her voice.
"I'll send you a link," Ollie replied with a smile. "I've only found her Instagram account so far, nothing more, but I'll keep digging."
"Okay," Lydia said, but it didn't feel okay. It didn't feel okay at all. She smiled, the action not quite reaching her eyes.
"So, what's the good news?"
Ollie beamed.
"I booked my flight home."
Lydia could have cried with happiness. She had missed her daughter so much that at times it had felt as if she were in physical pain. She had wanted very much for the youngster to have this adventure, but silently, selfishly, she had also longed for Ollie to stay.
"When?"
she managed to ask in what she hoped was a casual kind of way. But Ollie saw right through her as she always did, and her smile pulled a little to the side as she answered carefully.
4 weeks' time."
Something sharp pushed its finger into Lydia's chest. "That feels like a long time away."
"It isn't," Ollie replied gently. "It'll pass before you know it."
"You'll be back for Clara's christening," Lydia said, placating herself. Ollie nodded, smiling.
"And your 40th. Wouldn't miss either of them for the world."
Lydia didn't reply, although she smiled at her daughter through the clench of her heart.
"Gotta go anyway,"
Ollie said quickly, pressing one hand to her chest, her fingers finding the small gold pendant that rested there.
"Love you forever."
"Love you forever, all." It was a few hours later when the message came through from Ollie, along with Lily's Instagram name. Lydia rushed to tap it into the search bar, eager to see her, this woman who had been her inspiration all this time. She scrolled through endless, beautifully curated shots of all the same things Lydia had been doing, except in such impossibly glamorous situations that they seemed to dwarf Lydia's achievements completely. Lily, climbing the kind of snow-capped mountain that Lydia had naively thought she would too. Lily, casually catching a wave on a Hawaiian beach. Lily, riding a horse barefoot in the surf with the setting sun behind her. Lily herself, young and beautiful, with a face that could have launched 1,000 ships. There was only one picture that Lydia could relate to at all, and that was the photo of the list itself, the familiar purple of its paper catching Lydia's eye and making her think, for the 100th time that day, of Jake. How he'd been there for her when she needed him the most, just like always, but at the same time saying that he didn't want to settle down, that it was not the time to put down roots. "Not yet," he'd said, which Lydia had absolutely taken to mean not with her. She exhaled a steadying breath, trying to blow away her sudden pang of sadness, her longing for a man over whom she had absolutely no claim, and turn her attention back to Lily. Now that she had seen Lily herself, seen how utterly unattainable her lifestyle was, Lydia wasn't sure whether to laugh or cry. The woman she had been aspiring to be was so painfully out of reach that perhaps Lydia had no choice but to settle for being herself, or to give up trying completely. But she was beginning to see that, despite everything, she would never give up trying. If the events of the last few months had taught her anything, it was that she had it in her to be bold and fearless. Aga had made sure of that. Even if it was hidden away beneath years of inadequacy and doubt, there was something inside Lydia which was, and had always been, good enough. All she needed to do was find it. Chapter 24. By the time Ladies' Night rolled back around the following Thursday, the pain in Lydia's ribs had subsided, leaving in its wake a raw itch that was doing a fine job of distracting her from the much rawer feeling of unrequited love. In fact, it was driving her completely and utterly crazy. Also driving her crazy on that particular day was her mother. Aga had been in a terrible mood ever since Lydia had got back from work that evening, for whatever reason, and right now she was muttering and glaring to herself as she went about her usual routine of setting the table. Basia was sitting in her usual spot, cutting a fresh-baked caraway loaf into generous slices and smiling up at Lydia after every outburst from Aga, as if to balance out the general mood of the room.
"Could you get the butter, please, Lydka?"
Basia asked, in an even sweeter tone than usual, but Aga had slammed it down on the table before Lydia was even halfway to the fridge.
"I'm sorry,"
Aga said, the snarl of her words at total odds to their sentiment.
"I'm in a terrible mood this evening. I don't mean to take it out on you."
"We noticed," Lydia replied with a gentle smile. "Anything we can help with?" But Aga just shook her head furiously, going back about her business with a little extra stomp in her step. Mila came back in from the living room then, carrying Clara, who was dressed entirely differently from when she had left, on one hip.
"Oh, sorry about that," she said, handing the beaming infant to Lydia.
"Major poocident. Just need to go bleach every part of myself."
That, strangely, seemed to lift Aga's spirits a little, and she came around the side of the table to tickle Clara lightly under the chin.
"Better out than in, Kotku,"
she said, the edge to her voice noticeably reduced. Who knew something as simple as an explosive bowel movement could settle one of Aga's rages? All of them felt a little relieved by the de-escalation, and by the time they sat down together to tuck into the chilly chicken stew that the older women had made together, the mood was almost upbeat.
"So, how is Jake?"
Basia asked, in the kind of voice that made it plainly obvious that though Aga must have told her absolutely everything, she was pretending she still knew nothing. Mila, who Lydia herself had told the whole story to, and who was slightly less adept at reading the dynamic between the women, said nothing, just looked at Lydia with widened eyes.
"Fine," Lydia said, laying her cutlery down. "Let's talk about this once, and then we don't have to talk about it again."
Bashir's innocent face grew a shade or two less believable.
"I think we all know by now," Lydia continued, not looking at any of them, "but I might have told a few very small white lies about me and Jake. This is something that I'm trying to correct, and in the meantime, I don't want to talk about it, or about him, at all."
None of the women spoke for a moment. Then Aga huffed out a sigh that sounded almost like a shout, and took a big bite of sparsely buttered bread before she said simply,
"Then we won't."
"Tell us how the christening planning is going, Mila,"
Basia said, her smile a little too quick. But Mila just smiled in return, gently brushing back stray strands of hair from her daughter's forehead as she told them about the hand-knitted cardigan that one of the extended family had sent for Clara to wear with the christening gown, which Tosh, Lydia and Elena had all worn as babies, and how Pan Mitek had offered to bake a cake for the occasion.
"They're actually amazing," Lydia said between mouthfuls of pleasingly spiced chicken stew.
"I was sceptical about my first Pan Mitek cake, but I had to eat my words. Just don't let him ice a greeting on or anything. His spelling in English is atrocious."
Mila laughed at that, relief singing in her tone. She had, along with Lydia, suffered through a great many of Pan Mitek's culinary experiments.
"They're also rare," Lydia continued, "so you should feel honoured."
She laughed a little to herself, remembering and was just about to recount the tale of when he had made and decorated a cake for Ollie's christening with a very curious message indeed, when a knock on the door made them all stop in surprise.
"Nobody knocked during ladies' night. Even Steve was chased out of the house, round to Jeff's or down to the pub usually.
and he knew not to return until after 10 at the earliest. So who on earth could be knocking on the door at just gone 7:30? Aga and Lydia exchanged a look, and Aga rose from her seat, smoothing down her navy slacks as she did.
"I'll go," Lydia said, holding a hand out to preempt any argument from Aga, and she leapt to her feet, trotting down the short hallway to Aga's front door and sneaking a look through the peephole before she committed to open it. And the person she saw standing on the other side of the door was the last person she would have expected to turn up on Aga's doorstep. "What are you doing here?" she asked with genuine confusion as she swung the door wide to reveal the familiar figure of her husband. Ex-husband. He looked different to the last time she'd seen him, in a way she couldn't quite quantify. Maybe she was looking at him through a different lens now, but the cut of his jaw was a little less sharp, the colour of his eyes veering slightly from striking to cold. There was something just a little off about him. Was it just that she had never looked at him quite so objectively before?
"Lids,"
he started, and there was something off about his voice too, a pitch to it she didn't remember hearing before.
"I did it. I applied for the divorce."
Her brows pulled into a frown. "Okay, but you didn't have to come over here to tell me that."
"No," he said. "I didn't. But I planned to come and talk to you. You know, make sure that you were still happy to sign."
He didn't even look himself anymore. "I'll sign," she said, her voice more clipped than she was intending, and she almost saw him wince at her words. Honestly, she was most annoyed that even now, after all the years they had spent together, he hadn't remembered the sanctity of ladies' night. Even Jake knew to text, not call, on a Thursday evening. And there was his name again, clawing at her heart in the way that it had begun to do.
"But that's the thing," Adam continued, breaking through the grip of her thoughts. "I was going to come to make sure that you signed, but that was before."
Her forehead crinkled in confusion. "Before?"
"Before I saw you."
His voice dropped a notch down to that low, possessive rasp that had used to make her feel so powerful.
"With him."
"With Jake," she said, more to herself than to Adam, the memory of Jake's lips on hers rushing back at once and all but knocking all the air out of her lungs. Adam, too, looked as if he couldn't quite breathe.
"I just..."
His mouth moved, but the words were slow to follow.
"I couldn't stop watching you with him, and it's all I've thought about since."
"So, what are you saying?" she asked, latching the door carefully and leading Adam forwards a few steps into Aga's beautifully manicured front garden, away from the prying ears inside. He took a deep breath, and she could almost see the tension running in sharp lines through him as he began to speak.
"I'm saying that when those divorce papers come through, I want you to ignore them."
Her voice dropped a little, incredulous. "Ignore them?"
"Ignore them,"
he repeated more surely.
"Rip them up and then come back home to me."
She took a step back at that, as an emotion she was totally unfamiliar with pushed at the inside of her chest. It took her a moment or two to even think of anything to say in response, and when she did, her voice was so quiet that she wasn't sure he'd heard her. "I am home."
"Come home, Liz,"
he said again, more insistently this time, and he reached one hand for her, which she backed away from. "We don't have a home anymore," she said, her voice strengthening with every word. "You have a home and I have a home, but we..." She smiled, wistful and humourless. "We don't have anything, not anymore. You have Aurora and I..."
"Have Jake,"
he finished for her, the spit of jealousy in his voice. She nodded, whether or not she actually did have Jake. Adam nodded too, his perfect lips flattening into a hard line as his hand went to the back of his neck, a sure sign that he was struggling with something.
I broke up with Aurora,
he said without looking at her. You did what? Lydia almost laughed. She's perfect. He nodded again, more slowly this time.
You're right, she is perfect. Too perfect.
He ran a hand through his dark hair.
She's beautiful and adventurous and funny, and I can't keep up with her.
His nod morphed gradually into a light shake of his head.
I mean, look at these jeans, for God's sake. I'm a 40-year-old man.
Lydia had actually noticed the awkward silhouette of his super skinny jeans, but she'd been much too polite to comment on them.
I've tried my best to be the person she wants, you know, to be the person she deserves. I even got bloody Botox for her, but in the end...
He gestured vaguely to himself.
I just wasn't enough.
Lydia laughed out loud at that. She couldn't help it. It was just that she couldn't quite believe the words that were coming out of Adam's mouth. Well, she said, indignation bubbling at a rolling boil in her chest. Isn't that what every woman wants to hear? My new girlfriend makes me feel bad about myself because she's too perfect, so I want to come back to crappy old you. She laughed again, all humour lost as she shook her head in disbelief. So romantic. His brow tugged together defensively.
That isn't what I mean.
Then what do you mean?
I miss us.
Her eyes narrowed. What specifically do you miss about us?
What do you mean?
She stood her ground. Tell me three things you like about me.
What?
He asked, as incredulous as she had been a few moments ago. She'd so rarely challenged him on anything in the entirety of their 2 decades of marriage. Just 3 things. Her voice was steady. They can be anything. His Adam's apple bobbed a few times before he spoke again, and when he did, there was an edge to his voice, something a casual observer may have played off as hurt, but which Lydia knew from experience was something more akin to a tantrum.
I love you, all of you.
She didn't move an inch, and she didn't stop looking him straight in the eye. That's not what I asked.
I can't think of specifics, that's crazy,
he said, the tone of his voice rising, just the slightest amount, just enough to rile her if she'd let it. But she didn't let it. It's not crazy at all. I could have named 3 things I liked about you. His eyes widened, the slope of his eyebrows relaying his hurt.
I don't like how you're saying liked in the past tense.
And then all of a sudden, a window behind them swung wide open, Agger's formidable form leaning as far out as she was able, as she said sternly,
It is in the past. She is with Jakob now.
Lydia wasn't sure how to react. The comedy of her mother, apparently still in the foul mood she had been all evening, leaning out of a window to tell off this man, a man who Lydia had loved so deeply for so long, all combined with the fact that she was, in this instance, absolutely right. And Lydia had not missed the fact that Agger had called Jake Jakob. Adam would not have noticed the difference, she was sure of it, but she did. And Agger would have known that. The whole thing was very on brand for Agatha Pearson, and in that moment, Lydia loved her mother fiercely for it. So she reacted in the most Lydia way she knew how. Mama Chijo, she said, her voice every bit as stern as Agger's had been, while warmth bloomed unchecked in her chest. She knew her mother would see her clumsy Polish as it was intended, a gift in return. Stop listening to my conversations. Agger muttered incomprehensibly to herself as she waved Lydia's comment away, scooting back inside the window and slamming it behind her. Lydia fought to keep the smile off her face as she turned back to face her ex-husband, who was now standing slouched, hands shoved into the pockets of his entirely too tight jeans.
We were happy, weren't we?
His voice was as defeated as his stance. He could barely look at her.
We were, Lydia said gently. I think we were, but I'm not sure we were ever as happy as we thought we were. His face pulled into an even more sorrowful pinch at that.
It's not over, he said,
his voice gravelly and thick, and then he turned his back on Lydia and strode back off towards his car. She watched him until he'd rammed the car into gear and sped away, and then, with a breath so deep it felt as if she were blowing away the last remains of her old life, she knocked lightly on Aga's front door. It opened at once, four faces springing from immediately behind the door, and she laughed out loud. So, I guess you all heard that, she asked with a smile, and two of the faces beamed back at her.
Good for you, Lids, Mila said with a knowing nod.
Basia's eyes had all but vanished into the soft folds of her face. She was grinning so widely.
Proud of you, Lidka.
Clara was just clapping aimlessly, giggling softly to herself. Aga didn't smile, but she didn't frown either, just fixed her daughter with a look, studying her a moment before she said, in a steady voice,
Now all that nonsense is cleared up, let us get back to more important business.
Lydia could have hugged her. They went back into the house, the five of them, the mood of the day feeling considerably lighter as they each tucked back into their stew, Clara gumming a crust of Basia's bread while the women each tried not to comment on what had just happened. It was actually Lydia who broke first.
I did do the right thing with Adam, didn't I? She asked, doubt suddenly flooding her chest.
Two voices chimed, Yes! Even Aga nodded that time.
Yes, Mishko, for goodness sake. When things are in the past, you should leave them there. Don't look back, only forward.
Her head tilted to one side, salt and pepper bob unmoving on her head.
Do you need more advice from your mama?
Lydia smiled, warmth flooding to fill the gaps in her heart that she had previously thought were reserved for Adam.
I'm happy with the amount I've had, but thank you.
Aga nodded in return, and Lydia thought she might even have seen the very smallest hint of a smile tugging at the corners of her mother's mouth. She blew a contented breath out and looked around at her family.
I just can't believe none of you told me any of this before now.
Bashir's head tilted a little, mirroring Aga's.
You would not have listened.
Lydia laughed softly. You know, you're probably right. And then they sat together and ate, their conversation lost to small noises of satisfaction, along with the occasional squeal of joy from little Clara. And Lydia couldn't keep the smile from her face, not then and not for the rest of the meal, listening to these women she loved so much argue about which was the best delicatessen in the indoor market, or which of the youngsters in the Polish club were sneaking about together, or where in the world Pani Bozenka at number 17 had found the money to put a new conservatory on her semi. Maybe Lydia had lost the man she'd thought was the love of her life, and maybe she would never really have Jake the way she was beginning to realise she wanted him. But she was okay, here. She was weeks from 40, she was starting again, and she was okay. She was a woman, she thought to herself, her fingers lightly tracing the lines of her still healing tattoo, who could grow her own bloody potatoes. And for that moment, at least, that was enough.
Chapter 25. The weekend after that couldn't come soon enough, particularly not once Lydia saw Jake's text as she dropped Mila off after ladies' night. Jake, hope you're ready for a double whammy of adventures this weekend. And possibly for the first time in the entire history of the list, she actually was. There were only three things she hadn't yet ticked off her list, and she hadn't even decided what the scary one was yet. So the double whammy must be camping and stargazing. And though Lydia had long since made her peace with the idea that something would inevitably go wrong on any adventure she undertook,
She was beginning to learn to take such things in her stride. So when Jake rolled up outside Aga's house that Saturday morning, Lydia wasn't even worried about his pizza oven of a car. In fact, she had come prepared. He eyed her loose vest, jean shorts and flip-flops as he got out of the car and raised a single eyebrow.
"I hope you've packed more than that," he said, a twinkle in his eye. "The forecast for tonight is perfectly clear, which is just right for stargazing, but you'll freeze your arse off in that."
But she just smiled. He'd already given her the talk about suitable camping attire, of course.
"Oh, this is just so I survive the car journey," she nodded towards the two sturdy shopping bags she'd stuffed to the gills with extra socks and fleece blankets.
With that, he broke into that bright twist of a grin, the one that had recently started tugging at the pit of her stomach, and he grabbed her bags and wedged them into the only free space left in the whole car, just behind the front seats. The journey took just under an hour and a half, up into the wilds of the North York Moors, and they chattered easily the whole way, every last ounce of the tension from last time gone. By the time they pulled off the road and into what looked like nothing more than a farmer's field, Lydia was even growing used to the oppressive heat of their driving conditions. "Where are we?" she asked, eyeing her surroundings cautiously. Beyond the fields they were in were grazing animals, small crops of woodland, and absolutely no sign of civilization. Jake grinned, wiping a trail of sweat from his temple.
"Geographically, we're in a field just outside of Pickering."
"I've got a funny story about Pickering," Lydia interjected. "Remind me." He looked at her with a curious expression for a beat before continuing.
"But actually, we're at our home for the night."
She took another look around. "There's nothing here."
"There's nothing here yet,"
he corrected with a chuckle, pointing out a low shed-type structure in the very corner of the field.
"There's a toilet, shower and drinking water tap in that little building, and then the rest we're going to put up ourselves."
She'd known that camping would be a rustic affair, obviously, but she hadn't realised they'd be quite so far from, well, everywhere. She wondered if anyone but Jake would hear her scream, should any situation arise which might necessitate screaming, and a cold finger of vague fear slipped down the back of her neck.
"What are you thinking?"
he asked gently.
"I can't read that face."
She blew a breath out, long over her fear of appearing ridiculous.
"If you really want to know, I was just thinking that there isn't a lot around here to protect us from wild animal attacks or axe murderers or what have you."
"No,"
he said, his smile growing even broader.
"I suppose there isn't."
One corner of his mouth lifted higher, almost a smirk.
"Would it help if I said I'll protect you?"
"Yes. A little."
He laughed aloud.
"Fine, tell me your Pickering story and then let's get this tent up."
Lydia smiled to herself, remembering. "It was way back when Tosh and Mila were first living together. She called me one morning all in a panic. Said Tosh had said he was going to pick a ring that day and she was in no fit state to be proposed to." She pushed down the giggle beginning to form in her throat. "So we both pulled sickies at work and got to work on her. We had a full battle plan, you know, manicure, full body wax, even a fancy blow dry. So when Tosh got home from work that night, Mila was waiting there looking like a supermodel. And it turned out that Tosh was actually just going to pick a ring. On a work thing." She couldn't stop the giggle bursting out that time. "I didn't stop laughing for a week. Mila was mortified." Jake laughed too.
"That is a good story."
"Yep," she nodded. "Now let's get out of this car before we both die of heat exhaustion." Putting a tent up was a surprisingly physical endeavour, and by the time the main body was erected and Jake was showing her how to knock in the pegs for the guy ropes, Lydia was quite exhausted. But if Jake noticed her slacking off at that point, he didn't say anything, just carried on, busily whacking in pegs while he nattered away to her. And then, once the body of the tent was up, he showed her how to attach the pod inside, adding two small bedrooms to the actually quite sizable space.
"Which room do you fancy?"
he asked, a chirp in his voice.
"Left or right?"
Lydia had not fully considered, up to that point, the logistics of actually sleeping in the tent. It seemed ridiculous now, but seeing the two very definite sides to the tent, his room and her room, she was gripped by a strange feeling, like some kind of loss.
"Didn't realise we'd have our own rooms," she said, through the tightness of her throat, and she tried her utmost to make it sound like a light-hearted quip.
Jake just smiled casually.
"I wanted to make sure you had some privacy."
Thoughtful too, for God's sake. But what else was there to do except swallow down her feelings and carry on? She chipped back in at that point, helping Jake set out their sleeping mats and sleeping bags in their own rooms and gratefully accepting his offer of one of his two pillows. Real pillows, he made a point of saying. None of that travel pillow nonsense. And she was overtaken by a wave of his scent as she caught the pillow he tossed in her direction. She set it down on the bed she'd made for herself, wondering how the actual hell she was going to sleep, knowing that Jake was right there through that thin sheet of nylon. It didn't help matters when he rolled out his huge double sleeping bag with a grin. Lydia's setup looked like a torture device in comparison. He noticed her looking and smiled.
"I can't sleep when I'm restricted. Can't be doing with pyjamas or any of that, you know."
He nodded to the oversized sleeping bag.
"I can really move about in that beast."
Lydia's mouth felt a little dry. How the actual hell was she going to sleep, knowing that naked Jake was right there through that thin sheet of nylon? She coughed the feeling away, praying that the flush she had felt ripple around her entire body was not visible from the outside, and when he